We're back. It's episode 298 of Bat Flips and Maple Dips. I'm Patrick. He's Justin. And Justin, a couple of extra days off for the Jays this week. Not bad. Gives them a chance to rest. They had a team-only meeting.
Yeah,
behind closed doors.
After the thumping they got from the Nationals on Tuesday.
You mean the Phillies?
Sorry, the Phillies. Yeah,
they also. It feels like the it all feels the same, right? All these beatings. Yeah. They all kind of start to blend together.
That's why one of our recent episodes was titled "The Losses Will Continue Until Morale Improves." That was actually
the
most recent.
The thing
episode.
Is, I saw. I think the game against the Phillies, I saw some stuff that made me think they turned a corner.
In game two, you're talking?
Yeah. But I'm still very concerned about the bullpen. We'll save that for another day. We're going to chat a little bit about some injuries. And then we're going to skip right over recapping the series against Philly because why bother? We're gonna bring back an old segment we used to do, probably like 300 episodes ago. We used to do the fireside chat. We're gonna have a fireside chat. Talk about a few players. It's not gonna be stat. There's not gonna be stat barfing. I'm not saying there's no stats, but we're not just gonna barf stats. We're not just gonna.
We'll point out some crucial stats. We won't just rattle off their entire slash line or anything.
Exactly, yeah. We're not going to waste all of our time barfing stats at you so that way you're just like, I don't know what to feel. We're going to talk about four players. We're going to talk about where they've been, where they are, and where we think they're going. We're not talking about trades. We're talking about the direction of their season. So, Justin, I have no pop culture-y things today. I just want to talk about baseball. I want to be excited talking about the Toronto Blue Jays.
And you came to the wrong place.
Yeah, maybe that doesn't happen this year. I don't know. But until this team is out of it, we're going to keep talking about the possibility of the playoffs. Let's talk about the news, though. What do you got for me?
I've got two things here, Patrick. The first one is some good news on the Ricky Tiedemann front. He has been throwing at the complex again. This is per Keegan Matheson of MLB.com, friend of the show. He's basically going through full kind of spring training buildup again. He's in the complex, got to build it up all over again. Likely either end of May, early June before he's, you know, ready for start at the AAA again. They're going to take it really, really slow with him to make sure that there's no issues with that elbow. Also in Keegan's article, Patrick, because of the, you know, the timeline and the lack of innings that Ricky has thrown so far, I think it's only like 8 innings he threw at AAA before the injury. He could actually be a second half, you know, rotation option or even, you know, swingman, long reliever option for the Blue Jays. Because obviously they want to get him innings, but if the Jays are still, you know, in contention or close to, and he's pitching well enough to provide a boost to the big league club, he could be an option there where you bring him up, get him some innings in the big leagues, and see how it goes. So that's something to keep an eye out on as he's rehabbing.
I don't see it, but I'm happy that he's rehabbing. That's probably the best way to sort of look at it right now. But yeah, I mean, the Jays have to figure out what they're going to do as far as their pitching. Most of you have probably already seen the infographics on some of the more recent broadcasts on Sportsnet where they show the bullpen stats are...
Not
this is the 30th place bullpen, which means they went from being a top 5 pen last year to being dead last.
We never would have predicted that. It's
in a matter of 37 games?
Yeah, it's not ideal, and I tell you that much.
It's bad. But Ricky Tiedemann might be an interesting option down the stretch. I'm not holding out hope for it. I'd rather he log as many innings as possible as a starter in AAA, but whatever.
We'll see what happens. I mean, it's depending on what the situation is with the big league club, those innings it doesn't really matter where he gets the innings. It matters that he's pitching well during those innings. And if that is in, you know, Dunedin, Vancouver, New Hampshire, Buffalo, or Toronto, I don't think it really matters to me. As long as he can pitch and stay healthy when he returns the rest of the
season.
How
many more days before Yariel Rodriguez comes back?
Not really too sure. Hasn't been too much info I've been able to find on him.
His last start was April 29th against Royals. He would have been retroactive to the 30th for the IL. Today is the 9th, so this is day 10.
Yeah, there hasn't been... I haven't seen an injury update. I looked on like the news before.
Yeah.
Before we started recording, and I couldn't find anything. Honestly, the only thing that it has is just that he was placed on the IL. That's like the last article about him. So, obviously, probably not returning after the minimum would be my guess. But we'll keep you posted. Speaking of people who are dealing with back issues, because that's what that's what Yariel has. Jimmy Garcia, Patrick, his last time that he pitched was on April the 28th, which is, including today, 11 days ago. But he has not yet been placed on the injured list. The Jays have kept him on the active roster. He's been, you know, testing out the back before games, determining if he's available or not. If they would have placed him on the injured list, he could have come back this coming Monday. He would have just missed this weekend series here at the Twins before being eligible to come back. Do you think that he should have been placed on the IL because the Jays have now been pitching, you know, shorthanded in the bullpen for the last 11 days, which is, I think, 7 or 8 games. So not the best situation for the team to be in.
No, but what may have ended up happening was that isn't there a time limit where they can do a retroactive IL?
I believe it's 3 days.
They probably didn't realize until day like 4 or 5 it was a problem. At which point he's just going to lose an extra however many days. So they're like, look, we have 2 days off this week. Let it roll. Maybe he'll be ready for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm not saying this is what I would do. Yeah. I'm just thinking that's probably what happened. They got to day 4, day 5. Yeah. They're like, shit. Yeah, no, he's not.
Yeah, it is 3 days. I just checked MLB's website too. So
yeah, so they probably got to day 4 of the stretch where they had made the decision, nope, he doesn't need IL.
I mean, it's happened before where they have made the decision to put somebody on the injured list later on. I mean, it's tough, especially early in the season to... And with the way the team's been playing, to like really strain your bullpen even further than they already are. I think that they should have placed him on the injured list just because of the fact that even if they did it on day 6 or 7, I mean, it's still, you're able to bring up an arm, and putting him on that 15-day IL later on, it's good because you know he's probably coming back fully healthy instead of, you know, him saying, oh yeah, like I'm good, I can pitch again tomorrow, and then he hurts himself worse, you know? So that's my issue, is I think when you have an injury so early in the season, you almost just have to go for the injured list like as a default option. But that's how I feel about it anyway.
I see what you're saying. At the same time, I think they just reached that point where they could not backtrack. And they thought, well, he has the 2 extra days off. It's probably fine. I think that's probably what happened. And he may pitch tomorrow.
It's possible. I hope he does. Yeah.
We don't know. So there must be some sort of reason. It can't just be incompetence.
Yeah. No. I agree, but I mean at the same time it's like you get to that certain point and you just feel like he should have been on the injured list by now.
I hear what you're saying. I don't know. That would mean that it's incompetence.
Yeah. Sure. Let's call it what it is, I guess.
I don't know. I don't think that's the case, but I get it. I see where you're coming from.
Yeah, I just feel like the team has been, the guys in the bullpen have been asked to do so much, and they haven't done a good job of it.
No.
That just having a fresh arm in there to, you know, eat time in the game and you're losing 10-1, instead of having to use one of your, you know, better options right now, which I'm not sure who that is.
Yeah. Alec Manoah is pitching on Sunday, so
yeah, they're gonna need
hopefully they've got a full pen ready.
Hopefully they have a full pen ready for that game because they might need it. But yeah, that's the news. Fireside chat, Patrick. I know, yeah, you like you mentioned, we haven't done one of these in a while. We want to chat about a few players here today, four to be specific, before we get to previewing the Minnesota Twins.
Everybody gather around, huddle closer. I'm going to get a little bit closer to my microphone so it's a little bit more intimate.
Oh, I'm basically like licking mine because that's how it works, the studio mic.
I can't actually, my cord is stuck. I'm going to bring it closer.
Just inhale the damn thing.
This is it. This is as close as I've brought the microphone to my mouth in probably 5 years. But I want everyone to gather around. I'm going to tell you guys a story. Okay. It's not a limerick. It's not a rhyme. It's just thoughts and feelings. Okay. Let's talk about four players today. Players that are very important to this team's success, that are all kind of traveling in different directions. First one I want to talk about today, Justin, is I want to talk about Bo Bichette. We've talked about this many times so far this season. You don't have to listen every episode to know how frustrating and sad it is to see the current state of affairs for Bo. So finishing off the game against the Philadelphia Phillies, Bo went 1-for-4 with an RBI. Happy for him. He's currently hitting 191 with a 513 OPS. This is the worst stretch of games of his career. I want to pose a question to you about Bo. Okay. He's been an all-star pretty much since he's come up, right?
Yeah.
Do you still Bo leave?
Yes, I still Bo leave. I just a player of his age and ability, I refuse to believe that, you know, Bo Bichette woke up opening day and was just like, I'm going to suck now. I refuse to believe it. I don't think it's possible. I don't understand it. I look at everything that he's, you know, done as late as last season. It's not like this is something that we've seen coming, or like say George Springer, for example, we're not going to talk about, but it's not like we saw it coming. I mean, I look at Bo's spring even, and he hit 345. Like there was no indication that we would expect him to hit below 200 for the first month and a half of the season.
Yeah, and in his last seven games, he's hitting even worse than what he has the rest of the year.
Yeah.
The closer you get to the present day by looking at chunks of games for Bo, he's gotten worse and worse and worse. We've posed silly questions on this podcast. Is Bo injured? You know, what's going on? His career average has dropped from, he was a career 300 hitter.
Yep.
going into the season, he's now career hitting 293. That's a significant drop.
Yep.
For, it's, you know,
yeah, yeah,
a short period of time. It's not ideal. The question that I have for you about Bo is, what do you do?
So I know we're not going to barf stats, like you said, but a couple of stats that I've found concerning here, Patrick. With Bo, he's had one fly ball that he has pulled this season. The good news is it traveled 430 feet. It was his home run, his only home run of the season. Everything else that he has pulled, which is only, by the way, four other baseballs, four hits. He's had two doubles that have been like just down the line, and two singles that have both like been grounders to the infield. Everything else has been either straight away or for the most part oppo, which isn't uncharacteristic for Bo. I actually got into some of this in a Twitter thread today talking about, you know, some players who, you know, aren't doing quite what they're used to or what they should be doing, and some guys who are doing exactly what you expect them to. And Bo's pull rate, Patrick, for his career is 28%. It's at 19 this year. You can just see right away, like, he's obviously, to me, when I watch Bo Bichette, that's the last stat I'm going to use for Bo. To me, when I watch Bo, his timing is just not there. Like, We know that Bo Bichette is a great hitter at using all fields. But when I see that pull percentage, you know, below 20%, like 9% below his career norms, to me right away that signals a timing issue. He's not getting ready soon enough. He's using the leg kick, which, I mean, is great. It's his timing mechanism, but he's not, you know, initiating his swing fast enough. He's late on fastballs. He's not hitting off-speed or breaking pitches well at all. And to me, I'm just like, you know what? Like he's swinging and missing on those breaking and off-speed pitches so much compared to what he's done in the past. And I'm wondering like why he hasn't made an adjustment. And obviously, I mean, Joey Votto's got a famous quote, right? Where he's like, being in a hitting slump is like being lost in a labyrinth. Sooner or later, you find your way out, but there's always another labyrinth that you come to eventually. And I think, obviously, Bo is in that labyrinth right now. He's deep in it.
He is deep.
He's lost. In the labyrinth. Yeah, he's stuck right now. He's looking for a way out. And it's just like, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is for him. With Bo, I don't think it's an instructional issue. You know, like this, we've talked about team-wide approach and instruction. I think it's just timing for Bo. Like, He's got the ability. He hit a home run 430 feet at 110 miles per hour. Like when he hit the ball in the air, it was fine. He just hasn't been able to get, you know, underneath the ball enough this year. It's been way too many balls on the ground, way too few line drives. It's just been
okay.
Him and George Springer are both swinging axes at the plate. They're chopping wood right now.
Counterpoint. It is instruction, but it's team-wide instruction. It's not unique to Bo. The team is not performing with runners in scoring position. Its approach, there must be something happening, and I don't have the data in front of me, and I'm not going to go digging for it right now because we're recording, and I'm not prepared. So this is all me just kind of freestyling for the minute. I think it's a team-wide instructional issue when it comes to runners in scoring position. Somebody, somewhere, is trying to instruct these guys on how to generate meaningful opposite field contact at the plate with runners in scoring position. And unanimously, it is not working. Rebuttal?
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with you. I look at this team and their numbers with runners in scoring position, and that they're not great. You know what? They have improved, though. I will say that much. They were like at a 63 WRC plus, and not a 68, which is still second last. But it's the numbers are coming up, which is not to say
5
much.
For 14 against Philadelphia. This is what I was talking about, the turning point. Yeah. Now, Bo wasn't really a big factor in that. I mean, he did get an RBI.
I think he had the go-ahead RBI in that game, or the winning RBI, technically. But
let's run down the list.
It was also a hit to the opposite field. So
Vladdy, 3-for-5. Babe Schneider, 2-for-3 with a walk. Kevin Kiermaier, 3-for-4 with 2 ribbies. Kiermaier was the difference maker in that game.
Yeah, Kiermaier was great. It was good to see him really get going on offense. And I mean, he had a really good opposite field hit off a lefty. Like, I thought that his approach in this game was the best that we've seen from him all season.
So
that's good.
What I'm thinking with Bo is that while he tries to get this timing issue, whether it's instructional or otherwise, whatever it is, keep him in the bottom three in the order.
Oh God. Yeah.
To not because you have no faith in him, but because he's clearly got to work this out.
Yes.
And the only way for him to work it out is by continuing to get PAs. Benching him hurts the team. Sending him down to AAA hurts him and it hurts the team.
Yeah, that's none of those things are going to happen, yeah.
Yeah, they're not. I'm just saying, like...
Yeah, no, I understand.
These are your options. Trading him? Stupid. Not when he's at his absolute lowest point, right? Look at the bottom of the lineup against Philadelphia, okay? Schneider, 2 hits. IKF, 1 hit. Kevin Kiermaier, 3 hits. The bottom of the order is producing again. I think it's time to shuffle. George Springer cannot lead off anymore. Where I know this is supposed to be a segment about Bo and three other players. George isn't one of them. But you got to bump Bichette down to 7, 8, 9 along with Springer and maybe IKF and then move Schneider and Kiermaier up.
To me, Schneider's, I think Kiermaier has to stay down there.
Yeah, I don't know.
One good game does not a good season turnaround make. He still has.
I'm not saying he has to hit sixth. I keep him
in the ninth spot. He's comfortable down there.
Okay, George hits eighth then. Whatever.
Yeah, George has to move down there. I mean, to me, I would like to see David Schneider lead off. He's got some pop. If you're leading off Springer because he's had power in the past, then lead off. Why not lead off Schneider? He also has good approach to the plate. He doesn't chase a ton.
Yeah, he's not slow either.
He's not slow. He can get on base. And I mean, I think that they have to try something. And outside of, you know, hitting Vladdy leadoff, which I've been which I've proposed because he actually hits well with nobody on base.
I'm against that.
I understand why. But I'm trying to put this lineup in a place where, you know, you can string some hits together. And they did that against Philadelphia in the third inning or whatever.
That's
why
it's a turning point.
Yeah, it has to be changed. And I mean, especially with, you know, Springer leading off, whether it's Springer or whether it's Varsho or Vladdy hitting second, they're coming up, you know, 60% of the time with one out already. And it's what's the point of even having Springer up there if he's making so many outs? Like, same argument as Bo. I mean, to get back to Bo, you got to put them down in the lineup so that they can find their game and work their way back up. It can't just be, you know, go down for one good game and then put them right back up. That's not how it should be. It needs to be sustained results from my
I'd like to see next game Schneider lead off, Vladdy second, probably I would even go Danny Jansen third, and then keep Justin Turner clean up, and then Varsho moved down to fifth. He was 0-for-4 with 3 Ks against Philly. He's gotten kind of cold. I'd like to see him down there. And then you can mix and match whatever way you want. Springer needs to be in 7, 8, 9. Bichette needs to be 7, 8, 9.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which,
I mean,
I guess unfortunately means IKF hits 6. But
it depends who's in there. Yeah. But I mean, Bichette for me, Patrick, it's all timing. And that's.
Okay.
That's where I'm at on it. I mean, and we've watched 37 games now. I've watched most of them, for at least impartial. And seen a lot of Bo at bats, and it's just, to me, he's late on everything, and yeah, he's good at going the opposite field, but right now I think that's the only way he can hit them because he's just not on time for anything. So it's either being fouled off to the right side or hit to right field, and it's not sustainable. He needs to be able to pull the ball, especially in the air.
All right, let's talk about our second guy in our fireside chat. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Man, he has had a very difficult season. Very un-Vladdy-like. Looking at the first 40 games of the season. Although, I'm about to hit you with a little bit of stats. He has seen a significant uptick in his last 30. And even in his last 15. We're looking at OPS numbers that are like all-star. He still isn't hitting the home runs. Mm-hmm. The strikeouts are way up. And the walks are a little bit down at the moment. But his batting average in his last 7 is .321. His OBP is .387. His slug is .464. That's Vladdy. He had a great game against Washington when he went 2-for-4 with the Grand Salami.
Mm-hmm.
Extra pastrami. And then he went 3-for-5 against Philadelphia. 3 singles, although one of them did cash in a run. I think he's fine.
So
I think the slump is over.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the good news for him, Patrick, the last time Vladdy put a ball in play the opposite field was 14 at-bats ago. He's had 1, 2, 3, 4... I played appearances either end in walk or strikeout, 2 of each. Everything else either been straight away or pulled. He's had, you know, 10 plate appearances lately where it's been straight away or pulled. He hasn't hit the ball the opposite way lately, and that's a good sign. I mean, when Vladdy, he's getting his timing back. Same. He had the same issue as Bo. He was not pulling the ball nearly enough to start the season, and now we're seeing that happen again. And that, to me, that's awesome. You know, like I can completely get behind, you know, a Vladdy turnaround because of what we've seen lately. And for me with Vlad, the issue at the beginning of the season was just, you know, he wasn't hitting well at all against the fastball. He still isn't. Like, he's still not doing well against four-seamers compared to what he's done in the past, especially with a slugging number. But it has, like, greatly improved the last couple of weeks, as you mentioned. And some key things to look at with Vlad, his career, like his best year obviously was 2021. Well, he hasn't, his barrel rate then was 15%. It's now 12.8 this season, which is the highest it's been since that year. And he's also hitting, you know, right at his career average. His career average is, you know, 37.6% pull. He's at 38.5. So he's actually pulling the ball more than he has. He's pulling the ball more than he did in 2021. So the pull thing does not really apply to Vlad. As long as he can get the ball in the air a bit more, which he has been doing in his last, you know, his last, most of his last base hits, except for that little dribbler he had in the 3-for-5 game, he had two really hard singles that were both line drives to left field. And that for me is the sign that he's coming around. He needs to be able to hit the off speed pitches a bit better. That's where he's struggling this year. But in terms of breaking and fastballs, his numbers are coming up quite a bit from where they were at the start of the season. So I'm happy with what I've seen from Vlad lately. Honestly, one of the guys I'm the least worried about on this team right now, just based on, you know, recent results and the fact that he's, you know, picked his numbers up and his OPS is now back over 700, which it was below for a while. So I'm warming up on Vlad quite a bit here this last couple of weeks.
I think the game against Philadelphia was a significant turning point. Vladdy had to face a very difficult pitcher and was still able to knock out three singles before, I think his last two at-bats might have been outs.
He had a strikeout and then a ground out. But
But he still single.
Yeah, and the singles off of Nola were on two knuckle curves, and then the last one was a changeup, so breaking in off speed, which is great to see. So,
yeah,
he ambushed, I think, a couple of pitches.
A sign of improvement. The only thing I'm concerned about is, and I know the numbers aren't like, they're not crushing, but the walks are way down. If you look at his last 30, 26 strikeouts to 14 walks, which isn't terrible.
I'll take that, honestly,
118
man.
At bats.
Yeah, I'll take it.
But the last 15 games is 15 strikeouts and 58 at bats versus six walks and a 276 average. Now he's heating up in this last seven. Like I said, we did the slash line already, and I'm not worried about Vladdy anymore. His numbers are going to be ugly probably for another month. And even then, if you look at them, they're not really that so ugly that, you know,
just needs the extra base hits to come back, and then his numbers will look like they always do. His OBP is 1 point below where it was last year. Only 10 points off his career average. So, I mean, what are we doing? He's getting on base. He's just not slugging.
His season average is up to 246, which is still, like, that's not great. That's definitely 30 points below his career average. But 4 home runs in 40 games is, it's definitely less than what we were hoping for. But the league leader only has, I think, 10 or 11. I think it's Shohei only has 10 or 11. So, home runs, it kind of feels like home runs are either spread out more or they're down. I'd have to look at the numbers. But it's not just that, but, like, he just had some putrid stretches to start the season. But he's I think Vladdy is perfectly fine. I think both he and the organization should come to terms, though, that the $19 million that he's being paid this year might be a tiny bit of an overpay. Be interested to see what the negotiations look like after this season.
Yes,
I agree. If both parties are open to a long-term extension, because I don't see
Unless he
There's still 4.5 months of baseball left this season too, and who knows what happens over that last.
Yeah, if he goes off, then yeah, maybe I could see it getting spicier. But
I hope he does.
Yeah, I mean, honestly,
the Blue Jays are having better success. Hopefully,
I want the man to get paid, but I want him to be here in Toronto long term.
I want him to earn that money.
Yeah, it's got to be financially viable.
Yeah.
Let's talk about our favorite player on this team. Boy. We've talked about him 1,000 friggin' times.
The only Blue Jay who's featured in our Twitter bio, because we are, in fact, Danny Jansen stans. So
we are. Always and forever. We're going to talk about Daniel Robert Jansen.
Good. I can't wait for him to be qualified for Savant stats, because it's all red.
Oh, my God. In his last 7 games, he is 8 for 22 with 2 home runs. 3 walks to 2 strikeouts. He's hitting .364.
He puts the ball in play. I mean, his
slug is very sustainable, .818 in his last 7 games.
Yeah, I mean, overall in the season, it's at .667, which is wild.
You know what his career OPS is?
.755. I'm looking at it right
now. Yeah, I know. Get that tattooed. .755. That's incredible for a catcher.
Yeah.
He had a downtick last year in his average as well as his OBP, but his slug was still pretty consistent with what you would think he would slug. So like .786 OPS last year, that's still like borderline all-star. He didn't qualify, obviously. He only played 86 games last year. The freak accidents and injuries and all that stuff are going to stop. Like, it's not going to happen forever for him.
You hope. I mean, we've said about other players before, but here we are. But yeah, I agree. I just want a healthy Jano for the rest of the season. Yeah, it is. It's great to see him out there, because, you know, obviously we're not talking about Kirk, but we weren't getting any offense from Kirky. And
yeah,
we talked about Bo not pulling the ball, right? Well, that's what Danny Jansen does. He pulls the baseball. He's actually pulling it, you know, less than he has the last couple seasons, but he's just hitting bombs all over the field. So it's hard to hit contact. I mean, his fly ball rates are high. His line drive rate is at 41% right now, which is his career average is 23. So, I mean, likely just whatever he's doing at the plate right now, his barrel rate's at a career high. You know, he's just making hard contact. He's getting under the baseball, hitting it hard. And I mean, that's what this team needs. They need somebody who puts the ball in the air and knocks the ball over the wall. And his doubles, he's had a couple hits that have like hit the wall, a couple of doubles as well that just missed homers. So I look at Danny Jansen and I see, like, this is a guy that the Blue Jays, you know, need right now to stay healthy and to produce close to the level that he's at. Obviously, I don't expect him to hit .311, but if Danny Jansen can, you know, stabilize at .250, which he was at .260 in 2022. He was .228 last year. But as long as he has the slugging and has the power numbers, I mean, Kyle Schwarber gets paid to hit home runs and strike out. And Danny Jansen, I see kind of in the same vein, but just with less strikeouts. Like, his walk rate is great, and his strikeout rate has been great so far too. I don't expect everything to continue to be amazing and perfect like it has been, but he's been... He needs to be an example for how to hit on this team, because they need somebody to pull the ball in the air, and he's doing it. I'm glad.
Yeah, I agree. The way I look at Danny is that he has to be hitting in the top four when he's in the lineup. I think the days of him hitting 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th have to be over. You have to ride the hot bats. You can't just throw out the same lineup for 40 games and expect a change.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, Patrick, John Schneider has been asked about the lineup for like the last 3 weeks now, and
yeah, because he failed to do anything for 2.5.
Yeah, and in Philadelphia, he did say that they're going to stop looking so much at matchups and look more at who's hitting well and get those guys in the lineup more. So I mean, hopefully that means, you know, obviously we saw Danny Jansen DH while Kirk was catching this week, so we might see more of that. We should see David Schneider in the lineup every day, whether it's second, third, left field, DH, whatever it has to be, because obviously he's hitting well. So hopefully that continues to happen. And if somebody gets hot, they should play more. It's you ride the hot hand. I mean, if you want to win games, you need to start your best lineup. And just because a guy is a right-hander and there's a left-hander on the mound, and if that guy is hitting 100 over his last dozen games, he probably shouldn't be in there regardless. So I hope that they, the Jays, stick to that claim, and they need to do something because they haven't scored enough runs. So
yeah, and I think we're there. I think yeah, we're
I think the team,
the hard-headedness, the days of the hard-headedness, I think are over.
I hope you're right, and I agree with you.
Getting back to Danny Jansen, he's got to be in the top four in the lineup right now. Ride the hot bat, see what it gets you. I mean, Justin Turner has cooled off, and this is the other guy we're going to talk about, the fourth player, Justin Turner. Again, don't want to stat barf, but looking at his last 15 games, he's hitting .208. With a .263 OBP and a .340 slug. He's cooled off considerably. His last seven is even worse. We don't need to, rehash that. He's still having a good, solid season. He's driving in runs. But the significant cool off, he's got to be lower in the lineup now.
Yeah, month of May only hitting .143. For what it's worth, the expected betting average in that time is .313. So some bad luck, but he's only had three singles and 22 plate appearances, three strikeouts, one walk this month, putting the ball in play. Just not hitting the ball like hard enough. His launch angle this month is only 2 degrees. So he's been hitting a lot of balls on the ground so far and popping up a lot of balls too. It's either been, you know, straight up or straight down.
That's why I think now is the time to bump him down a little bit.
Yeah. Give him a couple extra days, more days off, and you'll free up that DH spot for Danny Jansen or David Schneider, whoever you can get in that day who's playing well.
Kevin Biggio, too. I don't know what
Biggio has not played well lately. So, I mean, I get why he hasn't played a lot, but.
But yeah, he can at least be in the field to open up the DH spot for somebody else. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Biggio is hitting 0.83. With a .139 slug in his last 15 games.
Not great.
Quite putrid. But we're talking about Justin Turner. Yeah, he's cooled off in his last 15 games, but he still kind of represents an important piece of this lineup. I think he should be the perennial five-hole hitter.
Yeah, I like it.
And I'm not worried at all about the current slump.
Yeah, obviously we don't expect this guy to, you know, hit 25 home runs. I mean, he hit 31 last year, but that was playing in Boston. He hit 23 last year. I was looking at his doubles. 23 last year playing in Boston. His career high is only 27. So I mean, if Justin Turner can hit, you know, 15 home runs for the Jays this season, I'm fine with it. It's be similar to what Brandon Belt did last year, but I'm looking at Turner as a guy who will, you know, take more walks than Belt did. Put the ball in play a little bit more, and we've seen that so far. And obviously a guy who can still play defensively. Like, he can play it. He's played third base a couple times and hasn't done too terribly bad. Maybe made an error, I think, once. But I agree with your assessment. I think the five hole is a good spot for him. And I mean, if you're facing, say you're facing a lefty or somebody he's had good numbers against in his career, he's got a very long career and he's faced a lot of pitchers. So if there's somebody that he has good numbers against, I'm fine with playing matchups for him because of the large sample size that he could have against some guys and putting him up into the top three for a game or two. If he gets hot, you know, put him up a little bit higher than five. But I think five's like that little happy spot for him. Doesn't have insane home run power anymore, but still has that ability to put the bat on the ball. And if there are runners on base, you know, he's capable of moving them over. So I like it.
That's it. That's the fireside right there. Let's do the preview here. We've got a big series against the Minnesota Twins, who are 22 and 15 now.
Yeah, I think they won today. So.
Yeah, they're 22 and 15. As of this recording, they are in a wild card spot. They're two games behind the Cleveland Guardians. Justin, let's go through the matchups.
For sure. Yeah, so the Jays are going to send Yusei Kikuchi to the mound tomorrow night to face off against right-hander Joe Ryan. Ryan is off to a really good start this year. He's been striking out a ton of batters. His K percentage is very high. He's got 46 strikeouts so far through 40 and two-thirds innings. And his whip, Patrick, sits at 1.01. All season, Joe Ryan in those 40 and two-thirds innings has only walked six batters while striking out 46. So don't expect a lot of free passes. Has also given up only five home runs so far, so a home run per nine innings, essentially. So, again, he's a very good pitcher. He typically will keep the ball. You know, he works a fastball up. He's got a good four-seamer, averages 94. Throws a split-finger fastball 23% of the time that he keeps at the bottom of the zone. And he's also got a sweeper that he's added and a slider that he throws for the most part. Those four pitches, he's thrown a couple of sinkers this season, but it's not enough significance. Not an insane ground ball guy, though. He 38.5% on the ground, which is still pretty good. He's just not giving up a ton of hard contact. That's been his, you know, bread and butter this year, has been limiting the hard stuff. I will say that I'm looking at some expected numbers. He has outperformed a lot of his expected numbers, especially the slug on his fastball. Batters are, you know, slugging 406 against it with an expected of 425. So I think Jay's batter should sit fastball. He does throw it, you know, nearly 50% of the time. So as long as you can hit that fastball, you should be able to time up the rest of his stuff. Kikuchi, on the other hand, obviously we've seen some great outings from him. Tough Twins lineup though, Patrick. We were looking at their team kind of stats before the game before the recording, and they're hitting quite well. Canadian Edouard Julien hitting well. Ryan Jeffers hitting well. Willie Castro doing good things for them. Julien and Jeffers both have seven home runs for the Twins. That's tied for the team lead. Even Carlos Correa is having a bit better of a season than he has. He's hitting .261. So, I mean, that this Twins team is going to have some offense. They just finished thumping Seattle 11-1 today and beat them 6-3 yesterday. So, they are capable of scoring more runs than the Jays have been this season, so it's going to be on the starting pitching to keep them in line. But that's game one. What are you expecting from Kikuchi? You think he can shut down the Twins? I mean, the good thing is Edouard Julien's a lefty at least, so he might not even be in the lineup, but we'll see.
It's a tough matchup for him.
Yeah.
I think this is the... This is the least, no, what's the right phrase? This is the closest pitching matchup of the three. I'm not nervous for Kikuchi. It's just, can he get through six innings without having to throw like 110 pitches?
Right.
Like, can he? Because if they grind him down, then they're going right into the pen. That's going to slow him down. That's going to slow the Jays down. Have to skip into the pen right away. So that's something I'm concerned about. I'm not too worried about the lineup. The Twins are very good. They're one of the better hitting teams in the league.
Yes, they have been off to a great start.
I don't know. Kikuchi's going to have to be a little bit more aggressive, I think, with them. Because if they end up being patient, we could end up seeing a lot of walks, and that's not good if you want to stay in the game longer than five innings. They need at least five innings of like one earned run to stay in the game to be closed, because that pen is just, it's struggling so much right now. I just don't know. This is the tough one, and this kind of sets the tone, right? Because if they got to dip into the pen right away, there's not really a lot of high leverage arms that are competing right now. They're not very strong. So,
yeah.
Yeah, the key is get to Joe Ryan early and hope that they don't get to Kikuchi early. He's the lefty, so he has a bit of an advantage there. And Kikuchi is arguably having the better season than Joe Ryan.
They're both doing very well, is what I would say.
Yeah. It's tough. This is a tough... I think this is going to be the matchup that might determine
who wins the series.
Yeah, and player to watch in this game, Carlos Correa has a career 4.74 average against Kikuchi. No home runs, though, but 19 at-bats. He's got a 1.208 OPS.
Yeah, a lot of Seattle games, probably.
A lot of Seattle and Houston games that they've seen. And I mean, obviously, the Jays and Twins play twice a year, too, and Correa has been the Twins last couple of years, as Kikuchi has been the Jays. So, yeah, a lot of history between those two guys being in the same division for a while. But, yeah, watch out for Correa tomorrow. He's the key guy to get out. Saturday, 3:07 p.m. start time. It'll be former Blue Jay prospect Patrick Simeon Woods Richardson against Kevin Gausman. This is an interesting matchup. It would have been really kind of poetic, I guess, to have Berríos pitch this game somehow, but obviously that can't happen since he just pitched the other day for a guy that was traded for him in Simeon Woods Richardson. Kevin Gausman has rebounded quite nicely his last few times out. I'm actually, you know, very feeling very secure about Gausman games now versus there was the kind of 3 or 4 rough game stretch there where he just wasn't very good. His last time out, for reference, I'm just going to pull up the game log here, against Washington, he did go 5 1/3 scoreless innings, 8 strikeouts, 2 walks, only give up 3 hits. That was it was a great start for the Gas Man. His last 4 starts have all been quality. Only, you know, 2 earned runs over that time. He's given up 5 total runs, but 3 of them were unearned against the Royals in that game that he lost. But I mean, he's been, the last 2 outings, I thought his strikeout stuff has been better. Obviously, the 8 strikeouts against Washington and the 5 in the 3rd innings was encouraging. So I'm glad that he's pitching better. Woods Richardson, it's cool to see. I'm actually really happy for him getting to the big leagues. He had a kind of a cup of coffee with the Twins the last couple seasons, but it seems like he may, you know, stick with him a little bit more this year. He's made 4 starts now, 20 2/3 innings, pitching to a 1.06 WHIP, 21 strikeouts, still only 5 walks. Hasn't given up a home run yet in those 20 2/3 innings. It's probably fine because the Blue Jays can't seem to hit home runs at home anyway. So, I mean, what it is. He mixes a 4-seam fastball with a slider, changeup, and curveball. For the most part, you're going to get, you know, 4-seamer, slider, or change. The curveball he only throws 9% of the time. And he's been doing a really good job of, again, limiting hard contact so far. So, we'd like to see it. I'm happy for the kid. I'm glad he's in the show.
Will it stick, though?
Hard to say. The sample size is so tiny. Yeah.
It's tough. This is an interesting matchup. I think we need vintage Gausman if the Jays are going to either win the series or have a shot at it. This has to be vintage Gausman, and that's asking a lot right now. It's tough. I'm not concerned at all about Simeon Woods Richardson. If he has a good game, good for him. But he's also still young and still trying to hammer things out. He's 4 starts isn't enough for me to be like, yeah, he's a star or whatever. I'm not checking under my bed at night for Simeon Woods Richardson. Yeah, this is the one I think that maybe we'll see a bit of a breakout from the hitting. We'll see. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I agree. Bailey Ober on Sunday, Patrick, against Alek Manoah. This game gives me the scaries. The big scaries. Because Bailey Ober is a pretty good pitcher. His win record is great. His ERA looks bad, but everything else looks pretty good for him against Alek Manoah, who, I mean, has 1 outing and didn't look great. Ober's interesting guy. Yeah, Manoah had moments, and I mean, the first couple innings were okay, and I think they just, you know, they should have pulled him after the 4th, but again,
absolutely,
this team has a tendency, and we've talked about before, to leave guys out too long. And I mean, I would have loved to see Manoah, you know, walk off the field after getting that 12th out in the 4th and knowing that he had, like, had something to improve upon. He comes back out for the 5th and doesn't record an out, ends up giving up, you know, 7 runs, 6 of them earned on a couple home runs, walked 4, struck out 6. I thought the slider looked pretty good. he just hung too many of them. The movement was there. The location just wasn't.
Are you concerned that starting Manoah is a sign that that forward thinking that we were hoping would happen after the butt kicking against the Phillies on Monday might just be not even from the hitter's side, it might just be like illegitimate, and that starting Manoah is a sign of like, yeah, we're just going to keep trying to force things to work. Maybe he'll be like 2022 Manoah. You know what I mean? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
I just don't get it. I understand Yariel Rodriguez is still injured, but God, surely there must be another option. There must be another way to deal with this pitching conundrum. I guess not. Otherwise they would do it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's tough when, you know, Bowden Francis on the IL, Yari Rodriguez on the IL, guys you could be using in that spot just aren't available. So it is what it is, I guess, until he either, you know, keeps pitching poorly, which we've seen in the past. I just don't think you can't give him too much runway this year, obviously. You need to like let him figure it out, I guess. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm just, it's tough. I hope the bullpen is fresh for that game. That's all I'm going to say. This just sucks. But this is, again, tough matchup. There's no easy matchups. There's no soft part of the schedule at this point. It's worth noting, in case you are kind of having the scaries over how things go right now, the Jays are currently in fourth to last place in the American League, but they're also really less than 10 games out. They're like less than 10 games out for both the division and the wild card. The only teams that are really kind of out of it are Chicago and Houston. Maybe, I guess, the Angels. But everybody from the Jays all the way up to the Yankees, they all have between 17 and 25 wins. So, like, that means that all these teams have at least 12 losses. Most of them have 16, 17, 18, 19 losses. So, like, it's not like any Tampa Bay are lighting the world on fire. They're 500. The Tigers are one game above 500. The Red Sox are one game above 500. The Mariners are two games below 500. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Jays aren't out of it. It's just they need a really good rest of the month to stabilize and to get themselves out of the hole that's been created from a rocky start to the month. Again, if you finish the month within two games of 500, that's good. That's enough to kind of keep things stable.
Mm-hmm.
And you can start making decisions in June and July about the direction of the team. This series against Minnesota represents yet another challenging opponent who are hitting very well and pitching almost as well as the starting pitching of the Jays. I mean, obviously Barrios didn't have a great start, but my point being, I think these are competitive games. The Jays are not going to roll over and show their belly. But they need to get timely hitting. They need to continue pushing with runners in scoring position. And they need Vladdy and Danny Jansen to be in the top four. And they need Justin Turner to not be in the top four. And they need Bo Bichette to be hitting 7-8-9. And they need George Springer as far away from leadoff as possible.
Agreed.
Any final thoughts?
No, I have no notes on what you just said. I think you're right on the money there. And I hope that the team continues to make adjustments, because the, you know, small ones that they have made have done a few things so far. And I just think that you have to keep making those adjustments until you find something that consistently provides results. And I hope that they're willing to continue tinkering with it. So that's my final thoughts.
I think we can leave it there. We'll probably be back on Sunday post game.
Yep.
Really hoping they don't get swept. Because talking about 17 and 23 is a lot different than 20 and 20. So,
yeah.
I am not too nervous because I can already start to feel myself disengaging with the on-field product. But still, there's hope. And even if it doesn't go well against the Twins this weekend, there's still hope. But yeah, maybe don't lose two games this weekend. That's it. That's all I got.
Yeah, but thanks everybody for listening. Again, you can find us anywhere you get your podcast by searching for BFMD Podcast. For Patrick out in Halifax, I am Justin here in Saskatoon, and we'll hopefully see you Sunday.